Good morning, may it please the court, Christine Ward, Deputy District Attorney for the 5th Judicial District, Attorney Registration Number...
Can I ask you to speak up?
Yes, thank you, sorry. Attorney Registration Number 35078. Following the November 2006 assault by the defendant, Mr. Rothney, against the victim in this case, charges were subsequently filed regarding the assaults, a number of crimes of violence, as well as a charge of false imprisonment. For reasons that are not before this court, a subsequent plea agreement was reached with the defendant, to which he pled guilty to criminal mischief, a Class 4 felony, subject to a 2-year deferred judgment and sentence. Actually, I believe the plea was a plea of no contest. It was alleged as an act of domestic violence. A motion for restitution was filed around that time based upon information received from the victim and victim's attorneys, including medical expenses and other things that were asserted to be a direct result of the defendant's conduct. After looking into the items that had been submitted for restitution at that time, the parties became aware that some of those expenses were not necessarily directly related to the defendant's conduct, and in fact there was a substantial medical bill that pertained to the victim's emergency surgery and approximately a week in the hospital that was actually forgiven by the medical center, making a finding of indigency for the victim. The parties at that time did stipulate to an amount that was known to the parties at that time. I would advise the court that included in the documentation provided to the prosecution and the defense at that time was specifically a medical bill, and actually it was an estimate that the victim had received from a plastic surgeon regarding scar revision surgery pertaining to the scar that she had on from where her bladder had been ruptured and repaired. As that bill had not yet grown ripe, she hadn't had the surgery done at that time, that was one of the grounds for defense counsel contesting that amount. And for that reason, the court essentially made a finding of good cause to delay a permanent final finding of restitution to be owed in the case. And the matter was specifically reserved by the court at the time that the parties stipulated, I believe in August of 2008.
At the time that $8,000 was awarded?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Was that the stipulated amount?
That was the stipulated amount at that time, with the court retaining jurisdiction specifically and agreed to by the parties, that once the victim was in a position to have that surgery done.
I think the trial court does not take issue with that characterization. I think the trial court's problem is with the subsequent hearing, 2009, and the subsequent application for restitution.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that is based upon, and as the court can see in Appellee's brief, what they're asking the court to do is focus on a very narrow portion of that hearing, where an inquiry, there was a colloquy between Judge Thompson and the probation department regarding fines, fees, and restitution. And there was never an intent on the parties for that to foreclose the issue of supplemental restitution. I would note for the court that at the time that the stipulated amount was entered in 2008 and jurisdiction was reserved pending supplemental restitution to be filed, victim was in no position to have the surgery. She was, in fact, incarcerated at that time for a nonviolent...
Was this reservation made under the old statute or the new statute?
As far as after the 2002?
At the time this reservation was made, my understanding is the restitution statute's been amended and permits coming back for more.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
right. I mean, it expressly does.
Yeah, well,
was this reservation done at the time when that statute was in effect?
I don't know that was contemplated by the parties, Your Honor. I mean, I believe that we would have only been relying on what the state of the law was at that time.
Was the order of August 18th made under 18603, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which subparagraph? would you say this order was made under? The judge in the subsequent order found that it was made under 1B. Is it your position that it was made under 1B? B is the one that says he's obligated to pay restitution, but the specific amount shall be determined within 90 days, unless good cause is shown, in which case it could be extended. Is that the provision that was made under?
Well, remember, there was nothing mentioned, nor was it contemplated, about the 90 days at that time. I believe that relying on the portion that says that given extenuating circumstances, and certainly that's what was before the court at that time. As I indicated, the victim was incarcerated on a probation complaint for a nonviolent offense in another jurisdiction and was in no position to have that surgery done, certainly not within the 90 days, and therefore there was never any mention of the 90 days reserving that.
Is your position that when it was August 8th, there was a finding extenuating circumstance?
I believe so,
yeah. Okay.
Your position would not be that it would also qualify under 1C, that basically in order in addition to or in place of a specific amount of restitution, the defendant pay restitution covering the actual cost of specific future treatment, in other words, a reservation of jurisdiction?
The court was specifically making a reservation of jurisdiction.
The court did say so, but the court did not identify, did it, under which subsection it was doing so?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
So I guess going back to the resentencing hearing for the defendant, the resentencing for the defendant, at that time the people did not have information regarding supplemental claims for restitution. The victim had in fact had the reconstructive surgery done and had been incurring ongoing medical expenses in addition to that period of incarceration. She'd been hospitalized a number of times, which delayed her obtaining that scar revision treatment.
She had obtained the treatment by then.
It wasn't known to the people at the time of the this resentencing hearing, Your Honor.
I thought the people referenced in the December 2009 hearing that she had had surgery.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe that we had any. I was present in that hearing, and I don't believe that we had knowledge of that at that time. We certainly weren't in a position to file the supplemental request for restitution. She had the surgery, I believe, in November. We have a letter dated from Dr. Timson, the plastic surgeon that we received in June.
She had the surgery by December. But
by the resentencing hearing, she had, Your Honor.
But the district attorney says they didn't know that she had had the surgery.
I don't recall knowing that, Your Honor. So if there's something contrary to that in the record, forgive me.
About 6 or 9 months later before you finally filed for those costs for restitution for that surgery that had been held in November?
Yes, Your Honor. We received the letter from Dr. Timpson outlining what the medical expenses were in supplemental documentation, as well as subsequently we received information from a treating psychiatrist that the victim had been seeing that we also were not aware of at the time. But to focus so narrowly on this colloquy between the judge and the probation officer, who I don't know if they had any knowledge that there was a specific reservation, but certainly it came up in the hearing because the court acknowledged that the restitution had been reserved. And clearly from the General Assembly's legislative intent, I understand that restitution is to some extent punitive. I understand that. But the overwhelming concern and the overwhelming purpose for it is in equity. It's not in punishment. It's in the interest of the public and in the interest of the victims being made whole by the conduct directly caused by the defendant. And to find that there was no formal finding by the court that no additional pecuniary losses had been incurred. To the contrary, that's not what the conversation was between Judge Thompson and defense counsel themselves. And I would say certainly the defendant had no legitimate expectation in any sort of finality in the restitution orders, certainly from the initial sentencing date, when we specifically had documentation from the victim showing that she had consulted with the plastic surgeon, had every intent of having this reconstructive surgery done to repair this scar. And yet, by the resentencing date, that we had no knowledge that had been done yet.
Is it Judge Thompson or Judge Ruckriegel at the resentencing in December 2009?
I apologize. It was Judge Ruckriegel at that time.
Thank you.
I believe it was Judge Lass was the initial sentencing judge. It was Judge Ruckriegel. I apologize.
You could have, at that time, made a motion for additional time within which to file for additional costs. You didn't ask for that in December of 2009 from Judge Ruckriegel, did you?
We did not.
Restitution just wasn't on the table, basically.
And it was acknowledged by the parties that we didn't have information regarding additional claims for supplemental restitution at that time. But I don't believe it was ever the intent of any of the parties to foreclose the court having jurisdiction. And I understand the language in the statute as far as the 90 days and whatnot talks about that this shall be submitted within 90 days of sentencing, or in this case, as defense counsel is asserting, the resentencing. But I'm asking the court to look at that and take the interpretation of the word shall to be directory as opposed to mandatory, as other jurisdictions have. The reason for that, sort of the urgency in getting these claims submitted is the interest and the goal of the restitution statute to make victims whole as quickly as possible. I understand that there were delays there were certainly delays and issues with communication with the victim that we didn't have knowledge or that I recall that she'd had incurred these additional expenses. But the overwhelming purpose of the restitution statute is to make the victim whole, and that has not happened. And there has never been a finding of a final order in this case, and there has been no formal finding as required by law that the victim hasn't incurred additional pecuniary losses specifically.
So the Section 3A of the statute operating independently of the 90-day provision?
I believe it does, Your Honor.
And there are still some limits even within that section.
I understand that, Your Honor. And the people are not asking to keep the issue of restitution open indefinitely as suggested by defense counsel by any means. But he's still on probation. I find it interesting that he's claiming that double jeopardy applies only to the request for a hearing regarding the supplemental restitution, which again is based in equity. It's to make the victim whole. But he's got no problems with the fact that when he was revoked on the probation initially and revoked on the deferred judgment and sentence, he takes no issue with the double jeopardy clause as it applies to the fact that he went from 2 years of supervised probation to 6 years. That the conviction entered.
How are you supposed to know? How is anybody supposed to know when a final amount of restitution has been set?
I believe when a finding has specifically been made by the court that there are no other pecuniary losses known at formally known or that can be directly attributable to the defendant.
Is that ever done?
That wasn't done, Your Honor.
Is it done in any case generally? I'm not sure I've ever seen such an order. Restitution is ordered, and that seems to be the end of it. Yet this statute says it can be increased if a final amount hasn't been set. It seems circular. If it can be increased, a final amount hasn't been set. It seems very circular to me. I don't know how you know when a final amount has been set.
Well, but clearly the court acknowledged that it still retained jurisdiction, and it wasn't until subsequent arguments.
This case, I understand.
Yes.
I realize there's an important point here to be made, but as a practical matter, is the defendant ever going to be able to pay this?
You know, he certainly comes from a better background, better circumstances than our victim did, Your Honor. It's been suggested that she should just sue him. Well, I understand he's fairly judgment-proof. But to reward him, to give him an additional windfall.
I realize the point you're raising. Criticizing you for doing that. We see these restitution orders into the hundreds of thousands of dollars on somebody who's in prison for life. And the chances they're ever going to be paid are minimal.
People do win the lottery, Your Honor.
They do win the lottery, you know, yeah. Thank you for telling me that. I'll keep entering.
I think one of the greatest concerns that we have is that this just doesn't just go to this particular victim, but as a general policy, this places victims of the most serious, catastrophic, life-threatening and life-altering injuries caused by criminal conduct by defendants through assaults, via drunken driving cases and whatnot, to
this victim have some duty to maybe come forward a little bit earlier? I mean, you say she had the surgery in November. The hearing was in December. Apparently, the bill wasn't submitted until June or maybe even later. I mean, it seems like there's some responsibility on the victim, if she wants restitution, to come forward and ask for it. She also seemed to not cooperate with trying to get medical records, from what I can glean from the multiple motions that were filed.
Well, so, you know, the
equity.
Defense always tried to put an onus on this victim, and cast blame on her. I believe that the victim was doing what she thought the court had ordered her to do, and she was still incurring medical expenses, and so she certainly may not have realized that she had an ongoing duty to provide them to the prosecution as they were coming in immediately. There were some communications with her previously about some medical procedures, and what she was doing was referring the medical providers directly to the district attorney's office for payment. And so clearly, I think there was some confusion on her part. We made a number of efforts to explain this, but it continued to kind of be an issue. And there were a lot of problems with us being able to maintain communication with her at times due to problems with her phone.
One question. Certainly.
If we were to agree with your interpretation of 3A, and if we were to agree with your interpretation of what occurred at the December 2009 hearing, wouldn't we still have to remand this for determination whether or not the prosecution or the court knew of the losses, not necessarily the dollar amounts, but the losses that were at issue for the new restitution request?
For the court to make a factual determination,
yes,
as to whether the prosecution
or the court knew of the losses for which the restitution was being sought, as of the time, you know, as of the time you're making the request.
In addition to remanding for a hearing.
Not in addition to, you know, even if we were to agree. Yeah, even if we were to agree, there was no final order. And if we were to agree with your interpretation, that doesn't end the matter. We'd still have to remand for determination whether the prosecution or the court knew of these losses at the time of the December 2009 hearing.
I think you're correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Let me ask you one last question. Why was the hospital bill excused? I realize they did not charge her, but isn't that still chargeable to the defendant?
Okay, the hospital made a finding of indigency through efforts by defense counsel in communicating with the hospital. They were not going to pursue it against the defendant. So, again, he received the windfall.
The defendant
and then,
that's still a damage. There's still a charge or expense incurred as a result of the defendant's conduct. And
yes,
we reimburse insurance companies and we reimburse others, third-party payers that incur expenses. Do we not?
We do.
Okay.
Thank you. So the public in general who uses that facility has become the victim of that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I don't know how much time you've got, but you start off with 15 minutes.
Thanks, Your Honor.
You don't have to use all that if you don't want to.
Very well. May it please the court, Michael Larchick, attorney registration number 43250, on behalf of Mr. Rockney. With me at council table is Drew Nielsen, who handled this matter below. And I'd also note for the court that Mr. Rockney and his mother are present in court today. I'd like to begin with something raised by Ms. Word in her argument, when she said that there's been no finding that there was a final order or a final amount of restitution due. I don't believe that's true. In December 2009, after the deferred judgment was revoked and the defendant was sentenced to 90 days of jail, there was also a minute order entered that said all fines and restitution have been paid. Contrary to what Ms. Ford's saying today, we're not relying solely on a colloquy that took place at that hearing. We're relying on the minute order that the court actually entered saying all fines and restitution have been paid. The prosecution raised no issue after that minute order was entered saying, wait a second, there actually is more restitution that could be paid.
Oh, wait a second. Didn't the prosecution at the hearing admit that your client had paid his restitution? And doesn't this order just simply reflect that whatever restitution had been ordered already had been paid?
It certainly reflects that the restitution currently ordered had been paid. But what's missing from the record, Your Honor, is any order of the court saying that additional restitution could be ordered. And in fact, if you look again a little further on in the record, there's the conditions of supervised release that are signed by the court in January, which again, there's a entry there for restitution. It doesn't say to be determined. It doesn't say subject to future increase. It says $8,810.18.
What do you do with the comments by the court at the 2009 hearing that ask about restitution, and the prosecution comes and says, well, there are expenses, but we don't have any bills. And the court turns and says, well, I'd refer the victim to the DA, essentially, to pursue those claims. Does that mean that, you know, it's a final amount? That suggests that there could well be more restitution ordered.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I would point out that it's now the prosecution who's relying solely on a colloquy and not an order of the court. But,
General, let me ask you this. Is it your position that only the minute order counts, that the colloquy can't be read in conjunction with the minute order?
I don't think the colloquy overrules the minute order by any means.
Do you have any authority on that? Did you cite any authority in your briefs?
I don't, Your Honor. But I don't believe that the colloquy alters anything, because even if the court meant to leave restitution open at that point, the statute only permits two ways in which it can do so. It can do so by giving 90 days or showing a good cause for extending the time period in which the restitution amount can be set, or there could be an order for specific future treatment. And of course, none of this treatment was future as of December 2009. The therapy had begun in March of 2009, 9 months prior. The surgical procedure occurred a month prior. And I believe that in volume six of the record, which is the transcript from that hearing, there is an indication that the prosecution was aware of the procedure. And at least the prosecution was certainly aware that the procedure was out there, and it was possible that it could be ordered. There's the burden is placed by the statute on the prosecutor to establish the amount of restitution under 603.2. The prosecutor has to present the evidence. So all the cases cited by the people in their brief for the idea that restitution can be increased later on, all of them have a specific order by the court leaving restitution open for 90 days. There's no such order here. And in fact, the prosecution blew by the 90 days, even though all the restitution amounts have been determined, or all the restitution amounts have been incurred by that point.
Who raised the 90-day argument in the trial court?
Your Honor, I believe we did. At page 552 of the record, this is our motion to dismiss the supplemental restitution. We raised the issue of whether the statute was complied with, including the statutory deadline.
And when you say including the statutory deadline, did you explicitly reference that, or did you just say whether the statute was complied with and let the trial court figure out how it wasn't complied with?
In the motion, we did not use the word 90 days in the motion. We did in the reply at pages 600 to 601 in the record, where we cited both subsection 1C, which is the specific future treatment subsection, and subsection 1B, which is the 90 days section. And the people also, in their reply brief to our motion to dismiss supplemental restitution, they also cited to the 90 days and the good cause. Now, they never argued that there was good cause. They cited 1B, said that 90 days of good cause is the standard, and left it there. So I don't think they can argue here that there's good cause for the first time. There's another problem raised with the people's argument here is that the defendant is entitled to finality at some point. That the people emphasize in their briefs and have here today as well, that the purpose of the restitution statute is to make the victim whole. And undoubtedly, that is one of the purposes of the restitution statute. But as this court recognized in Turasek, that is not the sole purpose of the statute. The statute also has to provide some finality to the process.
Let me ask you this. Did Turasek discuss 3A?
Turasek did not. And in fact, there's only one case
right
that cites 3A, and that's right. McCann.
Well, let me ask you a second question then about finality. Isn't there a finality protection in 3A itself? isn't there a, you can't increase a previous order of restitution if you've already got a final order of restitution?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And what the, where the people misread 3A, I would submit, is that they argue that 3A doesn't just say what you can do when the final amount of restitution has not been set. They say that 3A is itself a means to avoid setting the final amount of restitution.
No, I didn't read that. I thought that was, as I read the people's argument, it was a way to augment any prior order of restitution rather than as a means of avoiding the responsibility to timely request initially restitution.
But the prior order of restitution must be done through one of the four subdivisions of subparagraph 1. And if it's not still left open through one of those four subdivisions, and we have no order here where it is left open, then we don't get to 3A because the final amount has been determined. And 3A, I think, is drafted very carefully with this in mind, because there are serious double jeopardy concerns if the order never becomes final. If they say that they're not meaning to leave it open indefinitely, but it seems that they're meaning to leave it open at the whim of the prosecutor until the prosecutor asks the court to order. There's now no more restitution due and owing.
Is it at the whim of the prosecutor, or is it at the prosecutor's proffer that there are additional losses out there of certain types that need to be at some point considered? Is it really the whim of the prosecutor, or is it when they make a proffer as to additional losses, is that really a whim of the prosecutor?
Well, however you characterize it, Your Honor, it's not in the statute that the prosecutor comes back to the court and says, we now proffer to the court that there is nothing further. There is no further amounts of restitution owing. The court, what the statute provides instead, are the four subdivisions of subparagraph 1, only two of which allow the court to leave restitution open. And the court never entered that order here, and it was never, neither was complied with. And even if it had entered the 1B order in December 2009, we're nowhere near the 90-day deadline that would have expired in late March. The first supplemental restitution motion wasn't made until September. The second supplemental restitution order, or request, excuse me, motion wasn't made until the following April. So the defendant here is entitled to some finality at some point. If there had been a clear order that complied with Section 603, subparagraph 1, then the defendant is still entitled to finality, but he understands the parameters in which the final amount of restitution is going to be set. Instead, what happened here is the court entered an order saying all fines and restitution have been paid, which he had in fact paid them. So the statute demands finality, and double jeopardy concerns demand finality. If there are no more questions from the panel. Thank you. Yes.
I had posited to the opposing counsel, if we had agreed with her interpretation, a remand would be necessary for a further determination. When it says losses known to the prosecution or to the court, what do you think that contemplates? Does it mean a generic type of loss? Does it mean the dollar amounts? What do you think that would contemplate if a remand were appropriate in the case?
I'm not sure if I understand Your Honor's question. So, to determine the losses that were known to the court.
BA, it talks about an order of restitution may be increased for additional losses not known to the judge or to the prosecutor at the time of the order of restitution. Question I want to know is what standard or guidance would we give if we agreed with that interpretation as to what losses not known to the judge or prosecution means? Would it be categories of injuries for which they seek restitution? Would it be, you know, dollar amounts, specific bills? What do you think it would be?
Well, I think you have to read that section in conjunction with subsection 2, Your Honor, which is where it places on the prosecutor the burden of determining what the losses are and presenting that information to the court, either at the time of sentencing or within 90 days thereafter.
No, counsel, I understand your argument to that effect. I was asking if we did not accept your argument and we're asking for a remand. I thank you for your help. Thank you.
Let me try to answer your question more directly then, Your Honor. The amounts known to the court, I think that is referencing either Since it's referring to when restitution is still left open, which means it has to be 1B or 1C, when it's still referring to that, then under 1C, there has to be evidence of specific future treatment. I don't know that means a specific dollar amount or not, but I think it does mean that there has to be a specific order of the court that identifies a specific treatment.
So looking at the transcript of that December hearing,
mm-hmm.
the district attorney said the only outstanding issue on restitution was that Judge Lesh did specifically reserve. The court cuts her off and says, right. She then says the possibility of her future medical expenses that had not been incurred. The court says, okay. The DA says, I don't know what the status is. And the court says, I saw you reserve jurisdiction. The court has jurisdiction to address issues of restitution that may result from someone's continued loss. Isn't that an acceptable basis for saying that the court understood and found that there would be submission of additional losses in the future?
I don't believe, and
therefore it's not a final order, I guess.
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because that's not reflected in an order. And the district court in this case found in its October 2011 order that there was that the December 2009 sentence superseded any prior sentence. So to say that strictly that they were reserving jurisdiction, the case law well establishes that jurisdiction, that the court has jurisdiction to entertain additional motions for restitution. In any event, if the court wanted to keep it open, if the court wanted to reserve it, it couldn't have done so at a divorce from the statute. The statute provides the two ways in which it's allowed to keep restitution open. And I would submit that neither were followed here.
Arose by any other name, still arose. If he didn't use the nomenclature, that particular terms, could he reserve the jurisdiction if the import of it is evident?
If the import of it was evident, you know, perhaps, but I don't agree, first of all, that the import of it was necessarily evident. And second, as I mentioned earlier, this would be the first time that a court would have been found to have ordered a 1B or 1C restitution order where, in fact, the court didn't explicitly say so. All the cases relied on by the people and by us involve a specific order that lets the defendant know, you're not done yet. You could still be called back to pay more restitution. Here, the court ordered all restitution fines have been paid. Defendant went and served his 90 days in jail. 6 months later, they come and ask for more restitution. 7 months after that, they ask for more. And I would submit that does not provide the finality that was discussed in Turecek that needs to be balanced against the concerns for making the victim whole, and that for that reason, the judgment of the court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Did you reserve time for the appellant?
Okay.
We thank both counsel for their arguments. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you very much to both of you.